You're listening to Strong Runner Chick Radio, where our goal is to educate, empower, and connect female distance runners. If you enjoy this episode, be sure to leave a review on iTunes or any platform of your choosing, or share it with someone who might find this episode helpful. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello, hello. Welcome to episode 200. Cannot believe it. It's crazy that it's already been, gosh, 4.5 years since we have started SRC Radio, and it has been a ride. So we've loved, interviewing all of our guests and hearing from you all as listeners. And with that said, I probably will take a bit of a step back for a bit from the podcast and really focus in on some other ventures SRC has in mind for this year and beyond, and doing more in person as we can as restrictions start to lift. So without further ado, I want to introduce today's guest, Ruby Wiles. Ruby has been on a number of other shows, including the Female Athlete Nutrition podcast, in addition to For the Long Run podcast, and I believe Rambling Runner as well. So she's been all over the map. I think she's probably been on a number of others, and she's really been invested and involved in the running community as well as with SRC. So I wanted to interview someone today, looking back just with episode 200 on really going back to SRC's mission of helping to drive awareness around injuries, obstacles, mental health challenges, eating disorders. And so in today's episode, I do want to provide a trigger warning. Ruby does dive a bit into her eating disorder journey, so please know that. If you're sensitive to that information, maybe pass through those portions or just know that those are coming. I would say she really just delves deep into some of what she's faced in a very candid way, and I appreciate her coming on the show for that. So if you are, a longtime listener, I just want to say thank you again for tuning into these episodes. It means a lot to us. Please leave a rating or a review if you find these helpful. And lastly, I did want to provide an audio issue. So Ruby was so kind to record this on her end since I was having some tech issues. So the first portion, I sound like I'm underwater or something for like the first couple minutes. It does get better. And thankfully, Ruby is sharing her journey most of the time, so you can hear her audio much clearer, I would say. So just be aware, hopefully that doesn't turn you away from this. Again, it has some really valuable information and again, perspective that Ruby shares with us today. So again, if you have any recommendations, questions, suggestions, ideas, always feel free to reach out. I'm an open book and I love to engage with our community. So again, reach out anytime, and thanks so much for listening. Enjoy this episode.
Hello, Strong Runner Chicks. Welcome back to another episode of SRC Radio. Today I have on with me Ruby Wiles, who is a collegiate distance runner and is involved in a number of other endeavors, which I will have her share here in a moment with us. I'm really happy to have Ruby on the show. She's been following along, I think, SRC for quite some time now, and we've gotten to exchange messages and follow her running journey, as well as all that she has shared via the Harrier, the Oval magazine, Believe in the Run, and many other publications she's a part of, as well as podcasts that she serves on and assists with. So thank you, Ruby, for joining me today. Excited to chat.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor because I've been a fan of Strong Runner Chicks for many years now.
Well, I love hearing that, and I know we've come quite a ways just in terms of how long we've sort of been around and continue to try and do this work and spread the messages that we do and highlight the people that we do. So it's always great to hear that someone's been following us, and if our impact has reached even one person, I love to hear it. So thank you again.
It's definitely reached more than one person. It's been great to see how Strong Runner Chicks has evolved with you and Kelsey and Elise, and yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's been quite the journey as well. And, you know, as well as your journey, I've gotten to see you, Ruby, your journey evolve, and heard you on The Rambling Runner and some of the other podcasts too. So again, excited to dive in today to what you've been up to and how that's looking. And yeah, small world too. It sounds like you also are connected to female athlete nutrition podcast as well, Lindsay Cortez.
Yeah, I feel like I have my hands in a lot of different roles, yeah. And like the running community is just the community I'm so passionate about being part of. And like, I'm a really big exercise science and nutrition nerd, but with the focus on running as well. So I love combining the science with the running and helping people along the way.
Yeah, we'll take a jump back here in a moment. I'd love to hear a little bit about how you first got started in running, like, and how that's taken you to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. I first got started in running, like more seriously, pretty late in high school. I moved from a really small middle school to a larger high school, and I really enjoyed sports, but moving to a bigger school, all the team sports, I was no longer on the best team, the top team. Like, they had multiple teams for each sport, and I just struggled a little bit to find my identity. And I wanted to, kind of selfishly, I came to running because no one else in my school really did it, and it could be something that could be my own. I've always been drawn to more individual sports because of the correlation really between the work you put in and the results you get. I'm quite, like I said, I'm a bit of a nerd in the classroom too. So I guess that translated onto the run when I can always see a clear link between putting in the hard work and getting results. And so I think that drew me to running. I was awful at running at first. I was, when we had our like PE class, I would always be the last person. When we did the sprints and the running, but I wanted to prove to myself and also to my PE teachers that I didn't have to be the slowest kid anymore. And so I started running, and I really enjoyed seeing the improvements week on week, and doing something hard felt really good. So I became the runner because, I mean, that's the identity I think I wanted to have. Even though it really wasn't very cool in my school, we don't have track teams or cross country teams in the same way as you do in America. So it really was just me running like lunch times at school. But I joined my local club as well, which is a lot bigger in other countries, the club system. And I was the slowest because everyone else at my club had joined when they were 12 and 13, and I joined at about 16. So in my age group, I was last, but I enjoyed seeing the steady improvement week after week. And I found that I was getting better as I did longer distances, and realized that it was okay if I wasn't good at sprinting 400 or the 800, because there are other events out there. And I really started to enjoy racing on the roads. I started doing some like local 5Ks and 10Ks, and really enjoyed the community aspect more. I wasn't really surrounded by people my own age because they were mostly racing on the track, but I was surrounded more by men and women athletes that were older than me, and they were just so supportive and took me along. As in, when I was at races, they'd always be cheering for me or just supporting me. And I really, really enjoyed the community aspect there, even though they weren't my own age. And then I gradually started improving. I remember the first 5K I ran. We have this event called Park Run, which are free weekly timed 5Ks every Saturday at like a local park in your area. And the first one I did, I think I ran like 33 minutes. And then a couple of weeks later, I broke 30 for the first time. And I remember phoning my dad being over the moon that I'd broken 30. And in my head, that was like a super, like a really good time. And I'm not discrediting the time, but I had no perspective. And then so in my head, I kept going along to these park runs, and I'd see my time come down from maybe 30 minutes to 27 to 25. And I remember I was running consistently in the 23, 22s for a while, thinking that if I ever broke 20, that would be like an elite world-class performance. I wasn't really training very seriously. I would just kind of go along to these races. And yeah, eventually I did manage to break 20. And I got a coach. I had a lot of belief in myself starting running. Like when I went all in on running, I'd say about age 17. When I say that, I mean, I set big goals for myself. I believed in my potential to reach the world-class level. And I started going about that when I was 17 by finding myself a coach and really like training for me as an individual, rather than like part of a team or anything. And yeah, my time started improving, and eventually I got recruited to run in America.
That's awesome. It's really cool to hear about your journey. I don't even know if you had mentioned in the beginning there, for those who don't know, what country you're from or what's your hometown like, and
oh yeah,
and maybe how the running differs, you know, from America or from the US.
Yeah, so I'm from the United Kingdom. I grew up in England, and yeah, the running differs quite a lot because we don't have high school sport or college sport in the same way you guys do in America. So when you want to do a sport, team sports, there's often like your school and your university will have team sports, but if you want to do a more individual sport or even take your sport to the next level, in the same way in America, you join a club. But with a sport like running or swimming, like there is no high school sport really. There's a little bit of competition, but not really. Like not you might compete for your school like occasionally, but you don't have the whole training setup that there is in America. So you like for running, like you join, the common path is to join your local running club. In, I'd say in most major cities and towns, they have an athletics club. And you normally, you might go down 2 or 3 times a week on a Tuesday evening and a Thursday evening, and maybe on a Saturday or a Sunday. And you'll do a session with the group there. And there's people of all ages. So there'll be people that are young, like middle school age, and then there'll be masters, men, runners, and you'll be in different groups depending on your event and your ability. But yeah, and everyone will be from different schools and different areas. And so it's a melting pot of places, but you come together, you do the group session, and you go home afterwards. But it's totally separate from school.
Got it. So when it comes to your transition over to the States, what was that like? Like when you got recruited and coming into college, I imagine coming from the background where you just got into running, you know, for fun in a way, and then to see progress so quickly, what was that like to transition into your college team
out here? I mean, I got into running for fun, but it became serious very quickly. And when I say serious, I mean like, I decided very early on that if I was going to be putting in this effort in training, it was because I had big goals and I wanted to go to the Olympics. And that hasn't changed. So interestingly enough, in the United Kingdom, if you achieve like the grades, like the top grades, you can go to medical school as an undergraduate. And I achieved the grades and I got accepted into four medical schools as an undergraduate. And this was when I was 17. And so the fall of 2019, I would have been 18 and I was going to go to medical school. I had my sights set on that. I didn't think I was ever good enough to run in America. In England, running in America in the NCAA is seen like, well, when I was thinking about it, I thought it was for the people that were winning world juniors or European juniors, because we've got some pretty great young British athletes and I wasn't one of them. Having started running quite late, like I was still pretty slow in comparison to people in England and people in the world, just because of my lack of training. And so I was going to go to medical school and continue pursuing running on the side. But over the summer of 2019, I started running some faster times. And at our national championships, I came second in the 5,000 meters on the track at the under 20 championships. And at that event, there were a bunch of coaches from the United States that had obviously come over to recruit at our national championships. And afterwards, I had one or two come up to me and really put the idea in my head that, wait, maybe I am good enough to run in America. So I started, that was when the seed was really planted, and I started talking with coaches. And eventually I decided to forgo the medical school, and follow my heart, which was in running. And it was a really hard decision, because from the outside, like all my teachers and even maybe what I thought my family might think and those around me, I thought everyone would kind of think that the right idea was to go to medical school, like the quote unquote best, like right idea. Like, why would you give up medical school, like four offers for medical school, when you are really not very good at running? Why would you give up this professional career for a silly hobby? But my heart was with running, but I'd worked so hard all my life academically to go to medical school. But eventually I thought, when finally like I realized like I could have my opportunity, like running in America all paid for, and like really get the opportunity to take my running up a level, that won over in my head. Because medical school, I thought you can do it any age. And I think I'd be a much better doctor at age 40 than I would be at 23, just because of experience. Whereas with running, I know the likes of like Kira D'Amato and Sarah Hall are breaking barriers, but with running, it's more age sensitive. So right now I decided that my priority was with running and that I wanted to come back to medical school later in my life. And I guess that also explains why I'm so passionate about all the science behind running as well, because like I have the huge science kind of knowledge base and background. So yeah, that then in the spring of 2020, I made the trip across the pond. I first landed at SMU in Dallas, Texas, and pretty quickly the world kind of ended just as I'd arrived, and COVID hit. And so I was in a new country at a time of quite a challenging time. There was obviously a lot of like, not just like COVID, there was some like obviously political unrest and just a different culture I wasn't quite used to. But yeah, you'll know what happened in 2020. And then I ended up transferring after that first semester from SMU. I went to Adams State in Colorado. I transferred just because I wanted to train with some like more distance girls. And at SMU, currently there wasn't the distance program that I had hoped for in terms of the like, I'm a 10K runner really, and they were more like mid shorter distance. And so I ended up transferring to Adams State in Colorado. I I have mixed emotions. I had some challenges there, and eventually I was forced to leave the team. It was for reasons beyond my control. So in the fall of 2021, I ended up transferring again, or after the fall of 2021, I transferred again to Tennessee Tech University in Cookeville, Tennessee. And I've been there ever since January of 2021. I've been here since January 2021, and it's great. It's a small school. I have a great coach. He believes in me. And I still don't have the team that I kind of hoped for in terms of like having training partners, but I have a really great coach, and yeah, I'm really proud to run for my school.
Wow. So you've been, since first coming to the States, have there been three different schools you've transferred?
Yes.
Three. Do you have any advice, I guess, for those listening, like if anyone's going through a transfer, potential transfer, on how to make those decisions, or how you knew where to go to next?
Yeah.
It can be tricky.
I think a lot of time with transferring, you can get caught up in, once you leave your school, there's quite a time pressure because you often like need to find a school for the next semester. But I would say, like, don't rush in a way. Like, your right school will come. It might probably won't be the first school you talk to, and that's okay. I feel like with athletics, and because for me, I needed a full scholarship wherever I went. Otherwise, I just couldn't afford to go. It was really, really challenging emotionally. I would talk to a coach, have a great conversation. I'd vibe really well with them, and my heart would get set on their program, and I'd get led along the way a little bit. Like, we'd have a few conversations, and me and the coach would vibe really well. We'd talk about training, and it would seem like I was a really good fit for the school, and it seemed clear that the coach wanted me. And then a few weeks later, I'd find out that they didn't have the money for a full scholarship, or they just didn't have the money. And It happened so many times, and it was so emotionally challenging because I'd get my hopes up and think, I found the perfect school. I have found a great coach that I love, and then my heart would get broken. I guess my advice there is just patience, and also to be quite upfront from the start what you need out of the school. Like, if you talk to them and you need a full scholarship, like, let them know straight up, because there's nothing wrong with one being honest, but also you don't want to be have your heart broken so many times. I'd also say, just remember, there's something like 350, 400 Division I schools, same in Division II, and even more in Division III. So like, your school is out there. It's not limited to the top 16 you see competing at NCAAs. Like, there is a school for you. There's many schools for you. And I think my advice would, even to myself, would be to broaden my horizons, look at schools that I might not have considered, like, look beyond the Power Five schools.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we can forget it about like Division Two and Three, and the fact that there are so many different options out there. I mean, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of different colleges in the U.S. alone. So many to choose from. But yeah, you're right. It's tough to find the right fit. I think there, and with the coaches stringing you along, I feel like that's far too common as well. And not knowing exactly where to go, or, you know, I don't feel like I necessarily made the best choice with my colleges, but it's just about what you know at the time, you know?
And also,
to tell.
I don't blame the coach. No, I don't blame the coaches, because often the decision isn't theirs. A lot of the times the head coach is not a cross-country coach. It's the sprint coach or the track coach, or even it might be the athletic director or another director in charge of the funding. So the cross-country coach might really want you. And you might like, and they might do everything they can and still not be able to find the money for you. And that doesn't mean that they're a bad person. It doesn't mean that they don't want you. It means that often like the decision wasn't theirs.
Yeah, it's so hard. Ugh. Well, I'm glad you found a place that it sounds like you found a good fit now. And
yeah, for the time being.
Yeah, for the time being. How much longer do you have?
I'm only a freshman eligibility wise. In the classroom, I'm a junior, but that's also because a lot of my high school courses carried over because in order to apply to medical school in the UK, I had to take quite a lot of high level classes. So I'm a bit ahead in terms of my degree, but because of COVID and some injury struggles, I'm only a freshman. So this is actually only my first year competing, which seems crazy. So I will graduate my undergraduate next year, but I fully plan on competing for as long as I can in the NCAA. So I'll graduate as a sophomore. So I'll have two more full years of athletic eligibility. And yeah, I'm not sure. I'd be happy to stay, but if my results improved, I'm not ruling out moving again for a graduate program to a school with a slightly deeper team so I could have some training partners.
Of course, yeah. That would be nice as well. So talk to me a little bit, if you're comfortable, about like setback maybe, and how it sounds like you've had some injury or some setbacks throughout your career, how you've been able to handle those. And yeah, that's, I think, a big part that we don't talk often about enough.
I think I might rewind to before I started running, because I feel like that's quite important. I was diagnosed with anorexia nervosa when I was 10, turning 11, or 11. I was really, really young when I first started, when I struggled with food. I grew up as quite a chubby, fat kid, and I just didn't have, like, I never liked the way I looked from as young as I can remember. And when I was old enough to fully understand that I could have some autonomy over the way I look, I took it further. I had some struggles with my family relationships and my family dynamics within my, like, beyond my control. And I guess I sought to control my body to try and find, yeah, my life growing up was pretty chaotic and like disjointed, and I definitely felt out of control a lot. So I think I turned to food to find some control. So I got really, really, really sick mentally and physically as a result when I was 11, and I was hospitalized in a full residential treatment program for 2 years. I didn't leave the hospital until I was 13. It was awful. It was hands down the hardest time of my life. And I don't really think it helped me that much. It hurt me more than it helped me. It saved my life, because I was dying before I went to hospital. I was probably a couple of weeks away from dying. So yeah, it saved my life, but it's left me with some scars. And so when I came out of there when I was 13, I went to a boarding school. And I think it was difficult because it was kind of from one institution to another institution. But yeah. So I didn't feel healed, like, when I came out of hospital with my food. I was at like a healthier weight, but like I was still counting all my calories. Like exercising a certain amount, and I just assumed that was going to be my life. Like, I didn't know that there was any other way out of it. I just thought, like, I'm going to track what the calories in and track the calories out, because my life would be over if my weight ever changed from what it was. I never wanted my weight to get any higher, and so I felt like I had to control everything. So from and I couldn't eat a normal amount unless I like exercised a crazy amount. So I'd say from like that age of like 13 till I'd say about last year, I never went a day without not knowing, like, that I counted all my calories every single day, everything that I ate, and exercised every day. I'd say every day, or at least, like, I wouldn't plan on taking a rest day. Sometimes it might happen because of travel, but I was really rigid and structured about that. And gradually, like, my food diversity wasn't very good. I'd eat the same thing each day because that was easier than trying to count the calories of something new. And the thing is, I wasn't losing weight. I didn't want to lose weight. I wouldn't consider that I was struggling with anorexia then. I'd say that was more relative energy deficiency, because I wasn't in the mindset to lose weight. I wasn't trying to cut back calories. I just wasn't trying to add any. I didn't want to gain weight, but I didn't want to lose weight either. And I thought I'd found health because and happiness, because I was so much happier and healthier than I was when I was 10, 11, 12. And that was really my only other reference point, from like pre-hospital to post-hospital. So I just assumed that like the progress I'd made in my recovery from my eating disorder was as good as it was going to get. And I kind of settled for calorie counting and controlling, because it kept me out of hospital. It allowed me to live my life. I was healthy. I was running. I wasn't injured. I didn't see it. Like, I thought this was just going to be my life. And then about 2 years ago, I started getting this back pain. And I didn't know what it was. I carried on running. It gradually got worse, until like I first probably felt it about the middle of 2020. And eventually by the end of 2020, me and one of the doctors, or like the team medical profit. So a team doctor I spoke to, I wasn't able to get scanned because of COVID, but we diagnosed it as a sacral stress fracture. And then that was really anxiety provoking, because in order to keep my weight as I had been, and in order to keep my, like, I like food. So in order to be able to eat, I'd always exercise so much. So I like in my head to balance it out. And so all of a sudden I was not running. I ended up taking 6 months off from October of 2020 until March of 2021. I didn't run a step. I cross trained like crazy because, like I'd said before, my only way to eat was if I'd exercised so much. So, and also I was, before I took time off, like I was the fastest I'd ever been. I'd run a personal best in the 5K. I'd run a 16:45 in a time trial over the summer of 2020, and I didn't want to lose the fitness that I worked so hard to gain, so I was cross training a lot. But by the spring of 2021, I was still in pain. Like, when I say this, I had this back pain, like I would be in pain sitting down, I'd be in pain standing up. It would get a lot worse actually when I sat down, but I was in pain really like throughout the day. And in March of 2021, I was still in pain. Yeah, I hadn't run a step for 6 months. So I went and got a scan, and fortunately I found out that my bones were actually fine. I had never had a stress fracture, in fact, and we totally misdiagnosed it. which was infuriating because, you know, I would have liked to have not taken 6 months off running. But, and it was also upsetting to know, in a way upsetting, like confusing to know, like trying to find out what was actually wrong because I was still in pain. Fortunately, I was able to get a few more images and we did see some like slight disc bulging. But we still haven't really come to the root cause of the pain. And even as I'm talking to you now, I'm in pain sitting down. So I started back running and fortunately the pain doesn't really bother me when I run. It doesn't really bother me when I stand around or like I'm in the gym or cycle or anything like that. It really just comes on now when I'm sitting down. So that's a big issue because like most of my life is sitting down, obviously being a student athlete, like the student bit and like even talking to you now, but I'm able to run mostly pain-free and my bones are good. So I'm kind of putting up with it at the moment, but I still don't know what's wrong. But so at the same time that I wasn't running, I was kind of at a low mentally because I was trying to work out crazy amounts cross training each day. Cause in my head, I had a rule that like for every mile that I would have run, I needed to do 2 times the time cross training or something. So I was just exhausted. My days were just full of exercise and I couldn't give myself a break. Like I was really anxious and I just transferred schools again for the third time. And like everything was kind of building up because I was forced to leave Adams State for reasons beyond my control. And everything was just kind of spiraling mentally. Like I hit a really big low when I arrived, like January of 2021, mentally. I was really not a great headspace. I've struggled with depression quite a lot on and off, really since I was 11, 12. When I was 13, I attempted suicide. And I again found myself thinking about that about a year ago. And I knew something was wrong. I remember just being on my bed in one hand, head thinking about not wanting to be here, and then also feeling how much pain I was in sitting down, and I was spiraling. And at that time, I just didn't want to. I couldn't bring myself to like spend another like I don't know day on the elliptical or something like that. So I thought that the easier option was to try and purge, so I didn't have to force myself to exercise as much, but I could still eat because I didn't want to restrict because I don't know. And a night in my bathroom made me realize that something's wrong, Ruby. This can't go on. Even though you might look on the outside healthy and like you might be performing, like inside something was really wrong. And so I spoke with my coach, even though I'd only just really met him. I just kind of cried and opened up, and I've been following a bunch of great sports dietitians and therapists on Instagram through hearing them in podcasts like your own and some other podcasts, and I reached out to I'd actually already reached out to Lindsay Cortez. She's a sports dietitian. In the fall of 2020, so I'd already realized that I had some, like I knew I had some issues with food that needed solving. But financially, I couldn't afford to make the leap then. But I was at such a low point. I wasn't running. I had nothing to lose. So I turned. I messaged her again in the spring, and this time we managed to make it work. And yeah, when I started working with Lindsay Cortez at Rise Up Nutrition, and I was just at rock bottom. Like I was considering ending my life. I wasn't running, so why would I care if I gained weight? Like why would I care if I couldn't exercise? Like I had nothing to lose. So I started working with her when I wasn't running. And actually, that was a really good time to work with her because, like I said, like I couldn't compensate any food changes with exercise because I wasn't running. So I started working with her then. And by like, I was part of her female athlete system of transformation. It's a 12-week program where she works with female athletes to help them overcome relative energy deficiency in sport and their kind of mental hurdles. And by week four, I was actually able to start back running again. And I enrolled in this kind of like outpatient treatment program that she does. And gradually my running was coming back too. And yeah, we just worked really, really well together. And she was the help I needed. She understood me. She was an athlete herself, also struggling with disordered eating. And yeah, I worked really hard with her. From day one, I told her, I said, look, I need you to take full control of everything for me because I'm doing a crap job on my own. And she did that at first when I couldn't give my body what it needed without immense guilt. I just gave Lindsay control at first and it helped. I fully committed to her program. I ate everything she told me to, even though some foods that she made me, like not made me, but she like wrote for me, I didn't like. I just did everything she told me. And it was really hard. It wasn't a quick fix, but over time, like I began trusting my body and realizing that actually like my body's not going to change overnight. And it's okay to take a rest day or two or three or four. And yeah, I honestly didn't realize how, much I was struggling until I started working with her. Because when we first connected, like we connected before all of this, like over a year ago, like before I started working with Lindsay. And I thought I was beyond the, like the eating disorder because I wasn't the frail, sick, dying teenage girl I had been when I was, well, preteen I had been. So long story short, I finished that program a totally different person, and just in terms of having so much more freedom and like less anxiety for me. Anxiety had always kind of had been what was in control of my food, rather than the typical, like, not the typical, but rather than like being driven more by like an eating disorder or anorexia or any of that kind of like, I don't know, motive there. I think anxiety had always been at the heart of my food issues. Like it'd been a control. Like I worried what would happen if I didn't do something, if I did this, or if I changed my routine. Yeah. I just felt a lot more freedom after finishing that program. Oh, and so now I work for her. I help her with her podcast. So I really turned that around for myself. And now I love working with athletes at least being a behind the scenes role in Lindsay's program, Rise Up Nutrition. Yeah, that's great.
Thank you so much for sharing. I think, well, it's so hard to probably for you to share this and to listen to, and like for listeners to take this in, especially those who have struggled with any of this, like anxiety, depression, eating disorders. I mean, it's hard to listen to, you know, and try to understand like how can you, you know, for those out there like that are struggling now or looking back on yourself a year or 2 years, 3 years ago, like what were those things that Lindsay maybe encouraged you to do, or that you took upon yourself to do as well, like questions you would ask or considerations or anything that was specifically like profound or helpful for you to change that mindset, I guess, around food, exercise?
I think this is just a slight tangent, but we actually first started talking to record before I even like, probably over a year ago, and it wasn't like, I feel like a fraud now, but at the time I didn't realize that I was still struggling. like, and I'm not fixed now. I'm not saying I'm still not struggling, but I thought I was over, like, the worst. I didn't think that I could improve anymore. Like, I thought I'd plateaued in terms of my recovery. So I was like, great. I feel like I've overcome a lot. And I had. So we were going to record, and I just, eventually I just kind of realized that I still had a lot more healing to go on before I felt comfortable. And it wasn't until 2 weeks ago when I won my first conference title in the 5K, that I realized that I don't know if there will be a great time, but I'm in such a better place now, and I feel like I want to speak out a little bit more. So what did Lindsay help me with? I think the biggest thing is she made me feel like I wasn't such a like a standout, in terms of like that there's nothing so special about you, Ruby, that you can't also be healed. Like, you're not a you're wonderful, but you're not so unique that you can't be helped too. That other people have been through what you're going through. And that was hugely comforting, because I'd never really had, even when I was in hospital, treatment was really traumatic. My hospital experience has really, really scarred me. And it gave me a really bad perspective on therapy and treatment and working with professionals. And so when I came out of hospital, I never wanted to work with anyone, because I'd had such a bad experience. I'd literally been like just mistreated physically and mentally when I was in hospital, and I didn't have anyone understanding that had been through my experience. Whereas Lindsay, I hope she won't mind me sharing, but she struggled with eating disorders and mental health herself, and she opened up to me about that on my first call with her, and so that allowed me to disclose some of my story, and I felt like she understood me straight from the first conversation. Like, she didn't look at me like I had three heads. She looked at me like I was just a normal person, and that other people were struggling the same. And I was almost confused. I was looking at her like, wait, you don't think I'm weird? You're strange? Like, I was really embarrassed to tell her like the behaviors and the thoughts that I had, but she welcomed it in a way. Like, I'd never felt like I could talk, like, be totally honest about how kind of compulsive and obsessive I'd got before I spoken to Lindsay. And I finally had someone that understood me and didn't think I was weird, and that was just the biggest part, because from then on I felt like I could be honest with her about all my thoughts and behaviors, and then in a way that kind of not solved the problem, but like we could really work with the problem then, because I didn't need to hide what I was doing or be ashamed of the thoughts I was having, and I could tell her. So yeah, I think that was just a bigger thing, having someone there that understood.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think we get, well, one thing from this conversation is Lindsay's awesome, and so are you, and it sounds like just there needs to be more of this. Like, there's such a lack of professionals, whether it's coaches, you know, dietitians, psychologists, like, that are supportive and that really see you for who you are and who you could become, or they see that within you, that you're not crazy for going through any of this. And I think that's just so needed and not necessarily the norm. Like you said, like, we go through so many times of feeling like we're the only one struggling, and then realizing that no, like, yeah, it's not necessarily just a unique situation that can't be solved, but like you said, there's hope.
I think, like, by me sharing my, I was just going to say, like, by me sharing my story, like, I'm behind the tide. Like, I'm only adding to the voices that I've already shared, because fortunately, like, over the past couple of years, so many people have come out with their stories, and I've been able to tell a few through my work, through some of my writing and the work I do on podcasts. Like, I've been privileged enough to be the person telling the story or helping the person tell the story, but it's incredible to see more people share. And the more people share, I think the more resources will come. And yeah, like you said, we're a long way from having the resources, but we're so much further in terms of people sharing about it. And like, I think, I don't know if there'll be a, if there's a female, I mean, I'm sure I'm wrong, but I can't believe that there's a female athlete in college, a track athlete in college that hasn't at least heard of someone struggling with food. Like, I feel like it's common knowledge now. And that doesn't mean that it's free from judgment. I'm not saying that, but I feel like everyone's at least, it's definitely more of a discussion.
Yeah.
Not always in a good way, but I think in this topic, all attention's better than none in the long run, even though it might not be talked about in the right way always.
Yeah. Like, it's so common knowledge. I mean, it's almost unfortunate how common it is too. I think we realize, like, more and more people coming forward that this isn't just unique. It's like you said.
I know. I balance that dichotomy in my head. I'm like, do I really want to add to the collection of voices that are sharing about their stories? Because maybe it gives other people less hope that there is any way in life without struggling. But actually my struggles with food, like, predated my running by years. So for me, it's my story's kind of different there, because running really wasn't caught up in it in terms of, like, the origins. But I also think that I prefer it to become more commonplace than less, because less people will feel how I felt, and maybe you felt so alone. So I'd prefer people to think it's more common than to feel like you're the only one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of value or benefit from more people sharing their stories. And even if someone just sees a glimmer of hope from it, I think there's a lot of hope there. You're not saying it's inevitable that you will never heal. You're giving people hope and that there is a way out.
It's also not inevitable that you'll struggle. You don't have to struggle. Like, it's okay. You're actually normal if you don't struggle too. You're normal if you struggle and if you don't struggle. Like, everyone's unique.
Yeah. Yeah. I think by you sharing, though, you're also helping people to better understand. Like, maybe a coach, a male coach, for instance, that's, or female, that's just never struggled with this, you know, has a better understanding from you sharing.
I hope so. That's all I want to do. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So I guess where are you now in terms of how you're feeling about the situation, like how you're seeing yourself move forward and progress and sort of where you're at currently?
Like, oh, well. I mean, funny you should ask, Megan. I'm fixed. I'm fully healed. Every day's great. Like, no complaint. No, I'm joking. I'm being sarcastic there. I definitely still struggle, and I have to keep checking in with myself to make sure that I'm not falling back into old behaviors. And when I catch myself falling back into old behaviors, I catch myself and I actively revert them. So what I mean is, like, one of the things that I find myself sometimes falling back into is just eating the same. I've for the last year, I can proudly say I've not counted a single calorie, which is something I never thought I'd say. Like, it sounds stupid unless you've struggled, but like, from the age of 11 till 20, I counted every calorie I ate, well as you could. But this past year, I've not done it at all, and that's like the biggest step for me, actually. That's given me so much more mental space, brain space to like fill with other things, because I'm not like constantly doing mental math and like, I don't know, I have a lot more time in my day now. But so I don't count calories, but one thing I have found myself occasionally falling back into is just a pattern of eating the same kind of foods each day. Not because I'm like counting calories or trying to lose weight or anything, more one out of convenience and also just anxieties. Like, I don't know, I like to keep things the same. So when I realize that I've eaten like the same breakfast for 2 days in a, like 3 days in a row, I'm like, okay, day four, we're having something different today. So actually that was yesterday. I ate the same thing. It doesn't, like, I really like my normal breakfast, but I don't want my normal breakfast to become my only breakfast like it hadn't done in the past. So I forced myself to have different foods. So yesterday I had a different breakfast because I'd had the same thing for 3 days. And yeah, actually what I had for breakfast yesterday wasn't as good as my favorite, but I forced myself to keep the variety because I think it's like a use it or lose it. Like if I don't force myself to keep variety in my diet, I'm scared that I will fall into such a way that like I can never ever deviate from my usual foods. So that's one thing I do now. I definitely am just conscious of making sure I keep a huge variety of foods in my repertoire. I still struggle a little bit taking rest days, but I've taken one rest day a week for the past year, and that's a big thing for me. Like a one no running day. I sometimes might do something on that rest day, like a swim or a walk or a little bike, but there's always one no running day a week. What else? I think I've just put some guide rails in place in my life to make sure I don't fall back into old habits, like I like keeping variety in my diet and always taking one rest day. Like I don't want to go a week where I've run 7 days, because I know in my head I'm so competitive that if I run 7 days 1 week, I'll want to do it again the next week and the next, and then I'll fall back into the habit of not taking rest days. So I think that's the kind of thing that keeps me well now, is just being intentional about like putting in a few guide rails just to help myself, not control myself, but just to keep me on the right path. And so yeah, I don't really know if I'm answering your question, but also I have a lot of great people in my life. Like they're all virtual, like all the people I've met over the internet, like you, like Lindsay, that I don't feel judged by you guys. I feel like if I had some struggle, I have people to reach out to that wouldn't look at me like I had three heads. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful that you've reached out and connected, and that the internet is as hard as it may be sometimes. Like I feel like it's contributed in some sense to like comparison and such, but it's such a powerful tool to connect us all and help us know we're not alone. So I am super happy or grateful you reached out and were willing to share your story with us.
I've just always felt such like a...
I will be back.
I think I've well, always
what
just...
What were you going to say?
I think I've just felt affinity to the people that have shared their stories on your podcast, because I found that have resonated with me so much for so many years. So I'm like, it's kind of my turn to share. Everyone else has been brave and shared their story. So I need to be brave and do my part too. And yeah, I really am grateful that you give me the platform today.
All right, we are taking a quick break to share more about today's sponsor, as well as the sponsor of our entire Health as a Foundation 2 Performance Series Athlete Blood Test. They provide individualized athlete-specific blood analysis to discover unique nutrition, training, and recovery needs. This can essentially help you reach your goals by discovering if you have perhaps low iron, vitamin B12 levels, or any other biomarkers that you may want to improve upon. So whether you're running your first marathon or you're competing to win, we are rooting for you and can help you get there. Use code STRONGRUNNERCHICKS15 for 15% off your first blood analysis panel. Follow athletebloodtest.com on Instagram or visit their website, www.athletebloodtest.com. All right, let's get back to the show.
Okay, so jumping back in, so Ruby, I wanted to ask you, you're so involved, as you had noted, you want to give back to those who may be struggling right now or you know, just part of the running community in general. And I was wondering how you've gone about that. I know you've done so many things, namely you've mentioned you're part of Runners Love Yoga. You write for some publications. You also help out with podcasts, including Female Athlete Nutrition. So yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit more about all that you're involved in, how you've gone about this, because I will say, I really admire the fact that you've done all this. I think there are a lot of people out there who want to get involved, but they're not quite sure where to begin. And so you've just grown yourself in so many different ways. And I think that's wonderful. And so I'm wondering how you went about getting involved and how you chose the work that you are involved in. So if you want to share.
Yeah, I think I wasn't really sure how I could get back or be more involved in the running community. So I decided to do everything. It really came down to connections, in terms of like, I'd hear some people on podcasts and really resonate with what they were saying. And I just emailed people. I'd email some guests after I heard them on the podcast and be like, wow, like your story really helped me. It would just be like to email the guests or the hosts and say, thank you. Like, I loved the episode. And then over time, I became more friendly with some of these people. Like, and then eventually, like, I shot my shot and I'd like reach out and be like, do you need any help? Can I help? Like, most of, I don't get paid for my work. I don't get paid to do a lot of the work I do. I do it because I want to help. So that's kind of what I did. Like, I manifested all these kind of jobs that I do because I just reached out to people and said, I want to help. So originally I started working with Matt Chittum and his podcast, The Rambling Runner podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't work with him now because he didn't need my help anymore, but yeah. And then I currently help Jonathan Levitt with his podcast For the Long Run. And I'm part of the Endeavor Run team, which me and someone, an amazing man called Jake Tuba, where we put on running retreats for athletes. So I highly think everyone should check that out. It's called Endeavor Run. I am number one cheerleader and hype girl to Kristen Dornboss, who has her company, Paper Trails Greeting Company. You had her on an episode recently. I'm a hype girl and I help her out with some of her writing and ideas there. And then I write for a few running publications. I write for the Oval magazine. I'm part of the staff there. It's about 10 of our student athletes. We have a running magazine for college athletes and high school athletes. We say we're for athletes by athletes. Then I write for the Harrier, and I've written a few really deep, challenging pieces on mental health. I was fortunate to be able to tell Val Constian's story and Leah Fallon's before they were really on these big podcasts. So mm-hmm. I was really able to help there. And then I got connected with Anne Mazur, who is the creator behind Runners Love Yoga. And I'm really passionate about empowering women. And she does that through helping people connect better with their bodies through yoga and through some really great apparel. And then the thing I'm really passionate about at the moment is my work with Lindsay. And I just help behind the scenes with Lindsay's business, Rise Up Nutrition. I just do some odd end emailing, and I'm really in control of her podcast. So that's kind of my key job title, podcast producer for Lindsay. And I'm also coaching a few athletes myself. And that's something that I love. I really see myself wanting to be an NCAA coach one day, because we definitely need more females there. And I love coaching. So that's probably my plug, that like, if there's any athletes out there, high school, college, adult, amateur athletes, like masters runners, anyone, I'll leave my email in the show notes. It's just my name, rubywiles @gmail.com. And just reach out. I just want to help.
Absolutely. Oh, I love it. I'm just so happy that you're so involved in a lot of different ways.
I'm not someone that's ever complacent. So I can't really settle. So I love doing lots of different things. So that's why I'm involved in so much.
Yeah.
And I've probably forgotten. So I'm sorry to anyone if I've forgotten.
Yeah. When you're, I think it's especially so important at any age, really, but when you're younger, especially, or in college, coming out of college, not to settle and to continue to put yourself out there and, you know, the way you've done. Yeah.
One thing I want to emphasize is, like, none of these positions were given to me. Like, I created them for myself, or like I manifested them, or I reached out and asked. Like, that's probably my biggest advice. Like I wouldn't be doing any of this if I didn't initiate the email. Yeah. Like, I didn't get given any of this. I reached out, and it persistence. Sometimes it took me sending 3, 4, 5 emails to the same person because I wanted to help them, and I wasn't giving up until they said yes. occasionally I would give up if they didn't want to.
You're reaching out. I just think the magical thing too here is, for anyone that's listening that wants to do these things, you're reaching out, asking, how can I help? How can I support?
Oh, that's the biggest thing.
And I'm saying, you do expect things in return. I think your work is wonderful, and it's wonderful. You know, I'm not telling people to just do unpaid labor forever, but I think,
well, unfortunately, as
friendships and
as a college athlete, being in the NCAA and being international, there's not much I can do paid. A lot of what I am doing it voluntary, but I wouldn't call it unpaid labor. I'd call it volunteering and building connections, building relationships. Like,
exactly.
I don't know where these will turn out in the future. They might turn out in great in the future, but in the meantime, like, I love what I'm doing. I'm helping people, and it's not about money or accolades.
Right.
Like, I love being a part of the running community, and I want to do more.
Exactly.
So no, if anyone needs any help, let me know.
I feel like we could always use help for those. I just think it's phenomenal the work that you're a part of, and I just brought up the unpaid labor thing. I think there's a lot of, I've sort of seen backlash around doing unpaid internships and work, but I feel like that can be so valuable. Like, I'm totally for reaching out and initiating these things and helping where you can.
You're connecting, you're networking, you're growing, and you're building relationships.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and you just never know what it might lead to down the road, like with your career and such. So that's really great. Do you have any advice, I guess, for your younger self, just looking back on everything, whether it's personal, career, running related? Oh,
I have so much advice to my younger self, but advice I'd want to give like young people, and myself included, is really just to say that everything will be okay. It doesn't matter that you don't know how or where, or like where you're going, or have all the answers or a clear roadmap of the future, because I think, like, often, especially nowadays, we expect young people to know what they want to do with their life. Like, I want to say that it's okay if you don't have all the answers. It's okay if you don't know where you're headed. Like, everything will be okay, and I feel like you need to have the courage to forge your own path and trust your gut, even if it's untraditional and not a path that's well trodden. I would tell myself to stay true to you and to know that, again, you're not alone. Like, no one has all the answers. Everyone is just trying their best to figure out life along the way. Like, no one has this nailed down. We're all a work in progress, and that's okay. Everything will be okay.
Yeah. Good advice. I think
I'm not saying everything's going to be great and everything's going to be perfect. It'll be okay. The bad, the good will balance out the bad, and you'll make it.
I think that's just powerful in itself to say that to yourself, or to remind yourself of that, and to celebrate. I think celebrate the uniqueness of forging your own path, because you never know how it might look. It's certainly for you, it doesn't seem to be cookie cutter. Like, you're not following just some route that someone set for you, but being able to navigate transfers and going through hardships.
It's having courage, because I feel like my most courageous decision was probably be when I said no to medical school and said yes to my running. I said no to the conventional, traditional, well-walked path, and I said yes to, I took a risk, and I bet on myself, and that's a decision I'm so proud of. Even though I haven't realized what I want to yet athletically, I'm proud of having the courage.
Yeah, that's major, definitely. So along those lines, with courage and forging your own path, what does being a strong runner chick mean to you?
Well, because I'm a regular listener, I've thought about this a lot, and I would repeat every single answer every single guest has said, because each time you have a guest on and they say a great answer, I'm like, yeah, that would be my answer. Oh, that would be my answer. Everyone has such great answers. So I don't have anything profound to say, but I'd say, to me, being a strong runner chick, or just a strong runner in itself, means having the strength in who you are and the confidence to embrace your full self, the imperfections and all. Strength comes from within, and to be a strong runner chick, you must have the resilience and the grit to weather the storm of the world and not compromise your full authentic self for others. I feel to me strength is staying true to you and living from the inside out and weathering the storm of comparison or criticism or judgment that comes from the outside.
Well, thank you. The way you put it was wonderful, and I think is so valuable. And of course, a challenge, right? To not let people's criticism get to you, but
it's not a. I don't think it's ever a position you reach. It's just a goal you work to attain. It's a work in progress.
Absolutely. Well, I think you put it really well, and I appreciate so much of your time, your effort, your energy, and all that you bring to the running community, and that you brought here today with me. So thank you so much, Ruby, for joining me for the show. And lastly, I just wanted to leave it open to, I did have a question for you that we didn't get to. So a final question.
Absolutely. Before
how listeners can connect with you. I know you mentioned several people on the show who maybe have inspired you, or who, is there anyone that stands out to you, maybe specific to running, or whether it's role models or, again, those in the space, in the running community?
I don't want to answer that, because there's too many people, and I feel we're all picking out one or two. Just too because, many. I have a list of about 100, so many people have inspired me in different ways.
Well, I think that's a beautiful answer. Yeah. I just wanted to leave this space open if you have any final shout outs or
My one final thought is I really hope the listeners don't mind a British accent, because you've just listened to one for an hour. I'm really sorry if your listener count go down. We now know for the future that people don't like Brits.
I love British accents. I feel like if you don't, then that's an issue. So
I'd say just like I said, reach out, connect with me. Like coaching, I'd love to help. Again, I gave my email, rubywiles@gmail.com. And beyond that, if anyone just wants to say hi and connect with me or put me to work or me help you, like let me know. My Instagram is rwiles, so rwiles_xctf. So rwiles_xctf. I'm sure you'll put that in the show notes, but
yes, we sure will.
Yeah. Just reach out. Give me a follow. I'll give you a follow. Let's be friends.
Thank you so, so much. And yeah, I encourage all listeners to reach out. Maybe they have a project for you or something they want to get your advice on or hear from you on. So
if you know anything about me, I probably won't say no. So yeah, reach out.
Thank you. All right. Thank you so much, Strong Runner Chicks, for tuning in. I hope you reach out to Ruby and continue to support all the work she's a part of. So thank you again.
Thanks for listening to the Strong Runner Chicks Radio. Do us a favor and leave a review in iTunes to help spread awareness and foster the SRC community. Additionally, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter @StrongRunChicks.